Hello and welcome to episode number 35 of the AFTV Newscast. My name is Elias Saba and this is where I talk about the week's Fire TV news. This episode is being recorded on April 15th, 2016. Not too much new stuff to talk about this week, but definitely I did some digging into the Fire TV's new software update, found some very interesting things, and put up a few guides related to those things, related to my digging. And so I'll be talking about that, talking about apps a little bit, talking about some new hardware that Amazon released. And then, of course, ending the episode off by answering a bunch of submitted questions by you guys, the watchers and the listeners. All right, let's go ahead and jump right into things. As you can see here, if you're watching the video version, this article I put up, Amazon explicitly shows Kodi some love in the latest Fire TV software update. So as always, when these updates come out, after we've kind of figured out the initially on the surface what has changed, you know, the big new features or the big new changes or the big bug fixes, after all of that is kind of figured out, then I start to dig in deeper into these updates and start to try to decompile pieces of it, looking into the code and that sort of stuff. And to my surprise, my big surprise, when I dug deep into this new 5.0.5.1 software update, I found a bit of code that is specific to Kodi and basically does something positive for those of us who are using Kodi on Fire TVs. And so specifically what this code does is essentially it checks by name, by package name, if Kodi is installed on the system. So that's the first thing it does, checks if Kodi is installed. If it does find that Kodi is installed on the system, what it does is basically add Kodi to your home screen's recent list, to the very front of it. And then the code basically continues on generating that recent list. And so this happens right after the software update gets installed. So it only happens once. It's not like every time you turn on the device, Kodi is going to be stuffed in the very front of the recent menu or anything like that. But, you know, regardless of whether you've launched Kodi recently or it is actually the last thing you've launched, this little bit of code specific to Kodi, it doesn't do this for any other app. It doesn't do this for any other sideloaded app or official app. It actually just checks to see if Kodi specifically is installed and then puts it on the home screen as the first item on the recent menu. I mean, I was pretty shocked when I found this code. You know, I checked over it 3-4 times to make sure I was understanding what it was doing correctly. And yeah, sure enough, I even tested it myself just to verify myself, just because it was such an odd bit of code for Amazon themselves to include in this software update. But I took a Fire TV 2 running 5.0.5. I installed, first I factory reset the device, so everything was clean and fresh. I installed Kodi on it, and I did not even launch Kodi. I just installed it. I then allowed the box to take the 5.0.5.1 over-the-air update, took the update, installed the update. Sure enough, as soon as it rebooted back, the Kodi icon was right there, very first item on the recent menu. You know, I never even launched Kodi on that device. So, you know, that just reassured that I understood the code that I found correctly. I mean, my theory here, why Amazon would do this. I mean, first of all, it's odd that Amazon would do this. One, because it's signaling out Kodi specifically, you know, as a sideloaded app that they're treating in a positive, special way. Two, because as those of you who've been around the site for a while know that Amazon removed Kodi from their official app store. So Kodi used to be in Amazon's official app store, not for the Fire TV, but for the you know, the smartphone Android app store. So it never made it into the Fire TV app store, even though the Kodi guys specifically did submit it to the Fire TV app store at the time. But Amazon decided that they were going to remove Kodi from their official app store, and the reason that they removed it was because they felt that Kodi was related to piracy or promoted piracy or something like that, which was a ridiculous reason. I have several long articles. I'll put them in the show notes talking about what happened and the Kodi guy's response and everything. But hey, I mean, maybe now this little bit of code that I found is a sign that Amazon is more accepting of Kodi. I mean, Amazon's definitely more accepting of sideloading in general because, as we all know, with this latest 5.0.5.1 software update, Amazon has now basically given sideloaded apps, you know, equal merit with official apps. So you find them now in the home screen's recent section, you find them in the app section. You know, there's very little difference between a sideloaded app and official app anymore. One of the big differences is the icon itself. I'll put a guide in the show notes on how to change your sideloaded app's icon, just because the icon on a sideloaded app is of lower resolution because Amazon has to pull that icon out of the APK file itself, whereas official apps, Amazon has those images on their servers because the developers submitted those icons directly to Amazon. So Amazon has nice big high resolution images for all of their official apps, but sideloaded apps, they don't have records of those in the App Store. And so therefore they have to pull these lower resolution icons directly from the apps themselves, the APKs themselves. So this recognition of Kodi is the first time we've ever really seen Amazon acknowledge Kodi and actually do something specific to Kodi for the Fire TV. So with any luck, this is a good sign, and you know, maybe more Kodi or sideloaded app support will come in the future. Who knows? This post that I did has 63 comments, so it definitely encouraged a lot of talk, a lot of good vibes from Fire TV users and Kodi users overall. The Kodi guys even tweeted this article, you know, kind of pointing it out to their community that, you know, Amazon did an awesome thing here. One comment I did see on this article is somebody worried that this is just the first step to blocking Kodi in the future from the Fire TV, because now they can actually like locate Kodi. That's definitely not the case. This code is in the Fire TV's launcher, whereas the code for the app blacklist is in the settings app for the Fire TV. And really, for Amazon to add Kodi to their blacklist, it literally just takes a single line of code. It's like something like 20 characters. All they have to do is basically add the Kodi package name or any sideloaded app package name into the list of blacklisted apps. And so currently there's only two items on that list, which is Firestarter and Fire TV Launcher. So don't think that this is a sign that Kodi's going to get blacklisted soon, because, you know, that's just silly. It has nothing to do with that. You know, the part of the Fire TV's code that this was in has nothing to do with the blacklist stuff. It is the part of the code that basically generates the home screen on the Fire TV, and specifically it's placed right above the part of the code that generates the recent menu. So it makes sure that Kodi gets put at the very front of the recent menu upon reboot, and then the rest of the recent menu gets generated. All right, next thing I wanted to talk about is this new guide that I put up on how to stop a software update that is already in progress on a Fire TV or Fire TV stick. So I've been receiving this question a lot from people, either in the comments or emailing me directly. Basically, you know, they realize that their device either downloaded the update completely but hadn't restarted and installed it, or is currently downloading the update. And so I thought it'd be a good time to address that specifically. Basically, if an update is currently downloading, the best thing you can do is not pull the power on the Fire TV, but instead pull the Ethernet connection or kill your Wi-Fi connection so that the download itself actually fails. The reason I say don't pull the power is because you want to make sure to verify the update has not completed downloading on the device, because if it has completed and you kill the power on the device, then as soon as it powers back up, it's going to install that update. That scenario where it started to download it, perfectly safe to just kill your internet connection to the device, and the download will basically fail. And then you can go through my blocking guide at aftvnews.com/block and just block updates. And then that way, when it tries to restart the download, it'll just fail. Now, the more critical scenario is where the box has already downloaded the software update, but is waiting to restart, or waiting for the box to go idle for it to restart and then install when it restarts. Now, in that scenario, you should absolutely not power off the device, because as soon as you power it off, it's going to just start installing that update. And so this guide basically walks you through all the different scenarios of whether it has completed downloading or not, and whether the box is rooted or not, and whether you've powered it off or not. So there's a different part of the guide for each different scenario. So if you ever find yourself in a situation where a software update has downloaded or is downloading that you don't want to install, look for this guide, you know, quickly, and it'll tell you exactly what to do. For the most part, what you want to do if it already downloaded is locate the download file. It's a .bin file. There are two locations where you can find it, either in the /cache directory, or there's a spot in the /SD card directory where this file could be downloaded to. And then there's just instructions on how to delete that file. All right, so another thing that I dug around in the Fire TV update was to see what part of the new update actually handled the new double press of the home button detection. And so for those who might not know, the new software update 5.0.5.1 now has a default double home press action, where if you press the home button twice, it will basically jump you right into your apps library. And so, as we know, Firestarter had this feature for a while now, and a lot of people love that feature to launch their own sideloaded app, or really any app they want. And so I dug around to see how we might be able to disable this feature, and I sure enough found a way to disable it. Unfortunately, it's only available for rooted devices. So I discovered that the Amazon App Store app on the Fire TV is the one that basically handles the receiving end of that double home button press. And so if you disable this very specific service through this one ADB command on the Fire TV, again, you have to be rooted so that you can run the PM disable command. But this command basically disables that one listener that basically waits for that double press. Initially, what I wanted to do was try to restore the functionality back into Firestarter so that Firestarter's double press detection would work again. Unfortunately, that wasn't the case because the new update changed things enough to where the way Firestarter detects that double home button press has changed. When you press the home button twice, it doesn't respond the same way as it used to because now there's this default behavior. The good news is that it should be very easy for Firestarter's developer to update his app to basically use the new double press home button functionality and take it over as long as the person is rooted and the person actually disables the default launching functionality like I have in this guide. So if you have a rooted Fire TV and you want to disable that new double press feature, here's a guide. I'll put a link in the show notes. Very simple to do. The other guide that I put up this week is a guide on how to restore the internal ADB client capabilities of a rooted Fire TV. So for those who might not know, up until 5.0.5.1, the Fire TV's operating system had an internal ADB client. And basically what that meant was that an app on the Fire TV could actually make a connection, an ADB connection from within the Fire TV to itself. So this does not have to do with the ADB connections that you make to the Fire TV from like a computer or from a smartphone, for example, like when you sideload apps. That is the ADB server that is sitting on the Fire TV, and that is still there. So external ADB connections coming from PCs, coming from smartphones into the Fire TV are completely working the same way as they always have. But with this new 5.0.5.1 software update, Amazon removed the internal ADB connection, which is actually probably a good thing because it kind of makes the Fire TV a little more vulnerable. So if you happen to install a malicious app, it could make an internal ADB connection and, you know, wreak havoc on the device. Because once you have ADB access to a device, there's a lot of stuff you could do if you had bad intentions. But one thing that Firestarter does is it uses that internal ADB connection to detect the home button presses and do other things. And so a lot of people might want to restore that ability. And so this guide will show you how to do that. Now, again, this has to be done on a rooted device because that ADB client that was removed is in the system directory on the Fire TV, which is a protected directory. So you have to be rooted to be able to access that directory and restore this ADB client. Now, the good news is, though, for those who are not rooted, the developer of Firestarter should be able to include into his app his own ADB client and therefore not have to rely on the one that is in the system directory. But if you do have a rooted Fire TV and you follow this guide to restore the internal ADB client, the current version of Firestarter will have better home button detection again, because it basically cannot detect the home button as well as it used to because it lost this internal client. So if you are still using Firestarter on your device and it's rooted, I would suggest that you follow this guide. Should take you just a few seconds to download the ADB client, send it over your Fire TV, and basically just put it in the right spot and give it the right permissions, and you're good to go. And Firestarter will work just a little bit better at detecting those home button presses. There are also other apps, not just Firestarter, that use these internal ADB clients. I think some sideloading apps or some remote controlling apps, like where you can control aspects of your Fire TV through a smartphone. I think there's an app, I think I wrote about it a while back, but I forget right now what it's called. But basically, it allows you to remotely launch apps on the Fire TV, and I think that uses internal ADB connections. But just if you had an app that used to work on your Fire TV that stopped working with software update 5.0.5.1, you should maybe try doing this restoration of the internal ADB client, and it might fix that app for you. All right, let's move on. The other thing I want to talk about just happened today was that Amazon put up a little notice on the Fire TV 2's product page that basically says this item is under review. This is a generic notice that Amazon has put up on some of their products before. This isn't specific to Amazon's products. That is, it's just, I've seen it sometimes on just some random stuff that Amazon sells that has nothing to do with their own hardware. Basically, the message said, item under review. This item is currently unavailable because customers have told us there may be something wrong with our inventory of the item, the way we are shipping it, or the way it's described here. We're working to fix the problem as quickly as possible. So before I move on, I will say that about an hour or two after I put up this post, the message basically disappeared and the Fire TV 2 was back available for purchase. but it's still a little bit telling that this message did appear. And so in this article, I kind of speculated why this message might have popped up. And so sometimes if the product description of an item is inaccurate, you'll see that message because Amazon needs to basically rework the product page for an item or change the description or something is just not right. And so the Fire TV 2's product page is very dense with information. There's a whole lot going on there, and more so they're actually comparing it to other products. And so by far, there's definitely some out of date information on that page. And so, for example, I quoted in my article that Amazon's comparison of different streaming boxes to the Fire TV 2 shows that the Apple TV has only 70 channels, which was true when the Apple TV first launched, the new one that is, but now they're up into the thousands. And so that's definitely inaccurate. And that alone could cause this message to appear on Amazon's product page, basically as they rework things and as they update the page. But really, I don't think that's why Amazon put up this message. I have a feeling they were getting a lot of negative feedback with this new 5.0.5.1 software update, because a lot of people are probably used to using Firestarter or launching Kodi in a certain way with their double tap. And now that that broke and that, you know, changed, a lot of people probably the first thing they did was contact Amazon and tell them something's wrong with your product. You know, this update broke something. And my theory here is that maybe if enough people contact Amazon about a specific item, or enough people maybe leave a negative feedback about a specific item, it throws up a flag that maybe causes this message to appear, or somebody on Amazon staff who's not really aware of what's going on with the Fire TV is just kind of in charge of running different product pages, maybe saw that this product was getting negative feedback and so flagged it as, you know, needs review, and then that's what caused this message to appear. I would think that most likely me writing this article and me contacting Amazon's PR about this message is what caused them to basically go back and remove it from the Fire TV 2's page, because it is odd that they would put it on their own products page, since when this message appears on another product, it usually means that they have to go out and look into that product, and that takes a little time because they don't have all of these products and they don't have staff that are devoted to these different products. But with their own devices, you would think that they would know exactly what's going on with their devices. And so this message was a little odd, but it's now gone. But it is just kind of telling, most likely, that they were getting some negative comments from people due to this new update and the new blacklist that changed things from this new update. All right, moving on to some app news. Just this morning, actually, these 22 Fireplace apps just dropped from $1.99 to free. So if you're into looking at different types of fireplaces through your Fire TV, you can pick up one of these apps. I'll of course put a link in the show notes. I think about five of them or so. I saw a comment here from someone who said five of them are no longer free, but 17 or so are still free. So definitely check that out if you are into getting these free apps. They'll usually go back to being paid apps in a few days, so definitely hop on those quickly. It looks like they're different fireplace themes with different types of images. And so you can definitely check that out. Next, I wanted to talk a little bit about my coverage of new apps. And so if you're familiar with the site and you check the site daily, you probably know that every Sundays I put up a post basically with a list of all of the new apps that came out in the previous week, in the previous 7 days. And so you'll find that every Sunday. And I'll put a little summary, usually highlighting some of the apps that I think are worth mentioning the most. And then I'll actually put a big list of all of the apps. And so you could definitely check those out. But I realized that since those posts go out on Sundays, and that's usually the lowest trafficked day on my site, you know, usually during the week is a lot higher traffic. And so a lot of people might be missing these posts or might not be going back to it. So what I started doing this week, which I wanted to point out, is on my sidebar, if you're viewing the site on a desktop browser, you'll see this on the sidebar. But if you're viewing it on a tablet or on a smartphone, you'll usually see it at the bottom below the article that you're looking at, or below the main you know, 10 articles that are on the homepage. Basically, I started putting up on the side a list of interesting new apps. And so I'm updating this list daily. So I just wanted to point it out. Basically, these are apps that I think they're interesting. They're worth mentioning. Some people might want to look into them. Some people might want to use them, but they're not really like interesting enough to make a whole post about them. You know, like here's a block piling game that actually looks pretty fun, has some good reviews. But you know, I'm not going to write a whole article about it. You know, there's some workout apps that came out this week, just a day or so ago. But basically, if you're interested in knowing what's going on in the latest, like, interesting apps, and you're looking for something new, take a peek at this list every now and then when you visit the site. I'm thinking it'll be about no more than 10 items long. And it'll, like I said, every day I'll be updating it, knocking things off the bottom, adding new apps that pop in on the top. I basically monitor the Fire TV's app store every single day. So I, it's rare that a new app will appear on the Fire TV that I don't know about, that I don't actually see come in. And so, just wanted to point it out. New little feature on the side in case you don't see it, or not on the side, on a desktop browser, but on the bottom on a mobile browser. And so it'll appear on every single page, basically at the bottom. I'll be swapping it out with my latest app deals list that I also put on the side. But the main reason I did this was because the app deals lately have not been that impressive for the Fire TV, unfortunately. And so that little list of app deals has been a bit stale. And so I figured just to freshen up the that little extra real estate that I have on the site, I'll start covering just some interesting new apps that come out. Let me know if this is the type of thing you guys want to see in that sidebar. Let me know if you guys have any other ideas of what you'd want to see in that sidebar. One other thought I had was to maybe highlight, the top guides that people are looking at, or maybe, just the top news, like a rundown of like the top five stories that you probably don't want to miss, that sort of stuff. So these are the type of things I've been thinking of doing with that extra real estate, because it's just kind of sitting there stale. So I just wanted to point that out and let you guys know. All right, moving on to some non-Fire TV news before we get into the Q&A section of the podcast. This is all stuff that's kind of more related to Amazon in general, but still somewhat relevant to the Fire TV. First up is Amazon announced a new Kindle called the Kindle Oasis this week. Basically, this device moves into the spot where the Kindle Voyager used to hold as the top Kindle. To start off, it is fairly pricey. It's $289.99, which is really pricey for an e-reader, especially considering Amazon sells their basic Kindle for under $100 now, I think. But definitely do want to mention it a little bit here, because it's always interesting to see what Amazon is doing with hardware and what Amazon is doing with their latest new premium hardware, because that kind of sometimes gives us hints where they're going with their other devices. For example, before the Fire TV 2 was announced with its SD card, we saw that Amazon announced new tablets with SD cards. And that was the first time those tablets got SD cards, and so that kind of hinted at possibly the Fire TV 2 getting SD cards. So that's why I like to keep an eye on basically all of Amazon's hardware, not just the Fire TV stuff. So there's not too much in this new Kindle that is hinting at possible future Fire TV updates coming down the line, but the biggest claim to fame this Kindle does have is it's super thin, super light. It's their lightest Kindle yet. The thinnest part of the Kindle is only 0.13 inches wide. It has kind of an asymmetric shape where it's got a bit of a fatter hump on one side where you're meant to hold the device and kind of gives you a better grip. And then the rest of it is very thin, very slim, very light, so that it's, easy to just hold with one hand basically and read. It's got an accelerometer in it for the first time, which lets you flip it from one hand to the other. That way it'll just rotate the screen for you as you'd kind of expect. The older Kindles were never meant really to be held upside down. They always had an up and a down. And so this one can actually be flipped back and forth and is expected to. And so with this new thinness, they actually compromised on the battery a bit. So the battery in this Kindle only lasts 2 weeks compared to 6 weeks on the old Kindle Voyage. But to make up for it, they're actually including with all the purchases a battery case that actually is a leather case that protects the Kindle, that actually includes an extra 7 weeks worth of battery in the case. And the Kindle device actually charges off of the battery in the case. It doesn't actually have to be attached to the case for it to use that battery. It can just be in there, charge off of it, and then when you pull it out, it actually basically refreshes the internal 2 week battery in there. The screen on the new Kindle Oasis is the same 300 PPI screen that was on the Kindle Voyage. And that's pretty much it about this device. For those interested, I'll put a link in the show notes for you to check it out some more. One thing that was interesting is that the FCC filing for this device showed that it actually included a Bluetooth radio inside, but Amazon did not mention anything related to Bluetooth. So who knows, that might be a feature coming down the line. Maybe a feature that their tablets and the Fire TV or something all share together. Who knows? And the FCC filing also included what looked like a headphone jack. So I'm really curious to see what a teardown of this device looks like, to see if there's actually like a removed headphone jack. But yeah, that's the new Kindle Oasis. So check it out if you're into that sort of stuff. And next up, I wanted to briefly mention some new content that Amazon's working on, some original content that's coming up soon. So there's a movie called The Neon Demon, which has a lot of hype. It's a thriller starring Ellie Fanning, I think it's pronounced, Keanu Reeves, and Gina Malone. So the first trailer for this new movie is up. It's by the director of Drive. And so there's a lot of hype behind this movie. If you want to check it out, new trailer is up. You can find it in the show notes, of course. As always with Amazon's original movies, they're going to be released in theaters first. And this movie looks like it's going to be released sometime in 2016. They haven't really given an exact release date, but usually within about 2 months of the movie being released in theaters, it ends up coming to Amazon Prime Video for free. So that's pretty awesome that sometime in 2016, Amazon Prime members will be able to watch this movie for free, most likely. All right, the other original content news from Amazon that I want to talk about briefly is that apparently Amazon is working on creating a new drama, 1 hour long series inspired by Bob Dylan. It's currently under development. And so this is really early stages for this project, but really interesting to see what comes of this. It looks like Josh Wakely is directing and writing this series. It's going to be a TV series, in case I didn't mention that already. And we don't know exactly when it's going to be out, but it looks like Josh Wakely already has secured the rights to Dylan's music to be used in this series. So if you're a Bob Dylan fan, look forward to this series coming to Amazon Prime shortly. All right, let's move on to the Q&A section. As always, on Thursdays, I put up a post on AFTVnews.com asking people to submit their questions for me to address and for me to talk about here on the episode. People who are watching live can always tweet me at AFTVnews. I've already got some questions here on Twitter waiting to be answered. And so let's go ahead and get right into it. So first question here on Twitter is from Daehoon, who says, do I need to install TWRP every time I flash a new RBox firmware? No, absolutely not. All of RBox's ROMs, pre-rooted ROMs that is, come with TWRP also. So every time you flash a new pre-rooted ROM that RBox puts out, you are also flashing TWRP and replacing TWRP. So really the best way to keep your TWRP custom recovery updated on your device is to flash the latest ROM. And so RBox has said every time he updates TWRP, he's going to release a new ROM with that new version also. So you don't have to basically install the two separately. Once, you know, you don't have to install recovery separately and you don't have to install the ROM separately. It's one package all in the ROM. So you're good to go there. Daehoon also says that he is having issues installing the new 5.0.5.1 ROM. And that's why he's asking about this. He's wondering, trying to figure out what he's doing wrong. I would suggest trying to flash the older 5.0.5 ROM, seeing if that installs just fine. And then try after that installing the 5.0.5.1 ROM. All right, first question here is from Ulysses Rodriguez on the Q&A post. He says, as all Fridays, I'm watching you live. I installed the Firestopper app until Sphinx O2 could launch a proper update. And apart from the home button, the Firestopper app finally works again very well. However, I am a little worried because we have not heard anything from the developer of Firestarter app yet. Do you or someone here knows if Sphinx O2 is aware of the problem and would launch a new fixed version of the Firestarter app soon? As always, thanks for the selfless help and excellent reports. Yeah, I do know that Sphinx O2, the guy who basically created and is developing Firestarter, he is aware of the issues. He has posted on his GitHub page, basically. That's, I think, the best way to keep track of what he's up to is to look at his GitHub page. I'll put a link to that in the show notes. But he's definitely aware. I don't think he, you know, devotes that much of his time into Firestarter, so that's probably why he hasn't worked on an update yet. You know, like a lot of these third-party Fire TV apps and unofficial apps, a lot of these people like RBox and Sphinx O2, they work on these apps in their free time on the side. And so, you know, Sphinx O2, for example, he's not really making money apart from donations on this app. So it's not like he can devote a lot of his time into it. But he is definitely aware because he made a note about it on his GitHub page, and hopefully he will be releasing an update soon. I don't know. I don't really have contact with him. Sphinx O2, if you're watching, you feel free to contact me. Our next question here from Philip. He says, what are the benefits of rooting the Fire TV and what are the risks? Will all the Amazon services, including Prime and movie rentals, still work after root? Can I flash back to normal ROM to remove root if required? So the question about what are the benefits comes up a lot. And I always kind of say the same thing where it's difficult for me to tell you the benefits because I don't know what you like to do with your device. Basically, I just point you towards my guides at aftvnews.com/tag/guide. You can find a link at the top of the page, and you can skim through and see if anything that requires rooting appeals to you. And that's basically what the benefits are. You know, I can't just list all of the things you could possibly do with rooting, because those just keep changing, you know, almost every week. I mean, just this week I put up two or three guides on what to you can do that can only be done on a rooted device. And so if those things appeal to you, that's the benefit. As far as Amazon's services working and Prime movies and rentals and all that stuff, those all work perfectly. None of Amazon's services are affected by a rooted device. That isn't the case though for all services apart from Amazon. So there are some apps that detect whether the device is rooted or not and will not work because they think there's piracy issues going on. I think maybe HBO used to do this. I'm not sure if they still do. Other apps like from TV providers will often check for this. So definitely there are some apps that will detect that you're rooted or not. But usually if you just do a Google search for, you know, that service plus root bypass or hide root, you can usually find a way to get around it. I don't have a general guide for how to get around apps that detect root because it's different on a per app basis often, because different apps use different methods to try to figure out whether the device is rooted. But overall, 99% of the apps out there don't care whether it's rooted or not, but there are a few that do, so definitely keep that in mind. As far as flashing back to non-rooted ROMs, yeah, absolutely, very easy to do. I have a guide myself, I'll put a link in the show notes, on basically how to unroot a device. You can go back completely to stock if you end up finding apps that you like to use that are having issues with the rooted device, but no worries there, very easy to go back. All right, got another question here from Philip. He says, I have a Xiaomi game controller. It works well with the Fire TV. My only problem is that one of the buttons are not mapped correctly, and therefore I cannot play some games. Any idea how to address this on a rooted and non-rooted Fire TV? I do have a guide for the old DualShock PlayStation controller. Basically, what you want to do is find a .kl, which is a key layout file, that is associated with your specific game controller. Usually if you do a search for your exact game controller model and the word key layout or the word Android key layout, you'll find somebody who has created a key layout file. I'll link to the guide on the PlayStation controller that I'm talking about, and that'll show you how to add a key layout file to the Fire TV that isn't already there. And so basically you just have to get that key layout file, or you can even create it yourself. If you look, open up a key layout file like the one in my DualShock 4 controller guide. If you look at that key layout file in a text editor, you can basically see how the layout is. It basically just associates different buttons with different actions. And so from there, you should be able to figure out how to get your game controller one button supported better. Next question here from Paul. He says, hi, can you discuss the auto update feature for apps on the Fire TV? Latest firmware non-rooted. I noticed that my PS View app still had not been updated after several days, so I resorted to deleting it and reinstalling to get the latest version. I don't know too much about the app updating aspects of the Fire TV. It's actually something that's on my list of things to investigate, especially because it looks like Amazon is now starting to push updates, over-the-air updates to their apps individually, the default system apps, that is, you know, things like the photo app or the music app on the Fire TV. And so definitely on my list to figure out exactly how apps get updated and whether they all use the same mechanism, whether they're system apps or third-party apps. But one thing you could do is if you go into the settings, you can disable auto updates. And so if you do that, then when you go to the apps icon on your Fire TV, underneath it, there'll be a button that says update if there's an update available. And so again, I'm not sure exactly how it checks and how often it checks whether there's an update available, but possibly you'll be able to figure out that there's an update available if you don't have it auto updating, if you just do it manually. I'll put a link in the show notes to a guide on how to do the whole manual updating of apps. And so definitely check that out. Hopefully that'll help you out, Paul. Next question here from Alexis Vies. They say, I need to know about Fire TV 4K and Kodi. Is it possible to watch movies with DTS, HD, or true HD audio? First of all, you cannot watch 4K files through Kodi at all. That's a limitation that I've written about. I'll put a link in the show notes on more details about that. But essentially, apps need to be kind of officially approved as 4K apps for them to jump into 4K mode on the new Fire TV. And Kodi is not one of those apps that is approved for 4K. And so only a small handful of apps can actually do 4K on the Fire TV. I won't get into the nitty gritty of why that is, but I have written an article about it. So look in the show notes for those. As far as DTS audio and True HD, those do work through Kodi just fine. I haven't had any issues there myself. All right, next question here from Y314K. He says, Elias, have you ever thought about doing interviews of notable Fire TV scene developers like Arbox and Sphinx02 and others? I think he would be good on a written interview and even better on a video YouTube interview like your AFTV newscast. Even if you have to do minor edits of live streams versus posted interview, I think it would be a great new feature, maybe doing one a month. Also, any update on the plan to move to a standalone forum login-based comment section? Hopefully you have gotten started on your Fire TV Gen 1 upgrade guide. We know the testing phase has started per Arbox's post over at XDA, but was wondering if you are helping with the testing while at the same time giving you access to start on your guide. Not asking for an ETA, but trying to get a measure at what stage the project is at. So I have considered doing interview type things with these people that are basically creating all these awesome stuff, awesome apps, awesome ROMs and that sort of stuff for the Fire TV. Never actually went any further than just considering it. Really it's just mostly based on time and I haven't really had enough free time. Also, I'm not so sure how receptive some of these people are to doing these things. A lot of people who make these mods for the Fire TV kind of like to stay anonymous mostly. And so I don't know if they'd be interested in me, poking and asking questions and all that stuff. And again, their time is valuable too. And so maybe down the line, if there are developers who feel like having them interviewed and me writing an article about them specifically, please feel free to hit me up and I'll definitely think about doing that. As far as updates for the forum, haven't really done anything there. Again, time is an issue. Haven't had much time, but it's still high on my list of things to do. I definitely want to get a dedicated good forum, good comment system set up for the site. And as for your last question about the first gen Fire TV Fire OS 5 upgrade ROM process that Arbox is working on, no updates since last week. So last week, I think it was Friday, Arbox let me know that he was working on the OS 5 ROM for the first gen Fire TV, the NTWRP for that device. I don't know how far he's gotten. He hasn't told me anything since telling me that he actually got some work done on it. He hasn't given me any early access to the files or anything like that for me to start my guide with. He did that for the Fire TV 2, which was really nice of him, but it's not like a usual regular thing that he does and gives me access. For that, it was a special scenario. I think I was helping him test something out for the Fire TV 2's custom recovery and ROMs. But I don't know if he needs the same thing for Fire OS 5 on the first gen Fire TV, but we'll see. But regardless, even if I don't get early access, I'll have my guide up pretty shortly. It should be fairly similar to the Fire TV 2's guides, so shouldn't be anything crazy there. All right, we got a question here from Bez1.0. He says, the updated TWRP in this version should disable auto-flashing Amazon updates. He took that quote directly from Arbox's GitHub, and he's asking, do we need to block after the custom ROM? So technically, no. Arbox has updated his custom recovery TWRP for the Fire TV 2 to block over-the-air updates. So if you're running 5.0.5.1, which is the latest pre-rooted ROM that Arbox has released for the Fire TV 2, if it tries to update to whatever the next version is going to be, TWRP should block the update. Now, I say should because we actually thought that his pre-rooted ROMs before that were blocking the updates, but it turns out that TWRP itself was installing the official over-the-air update if it downloaded and restarted the device. So while technically this new TWRP version should block the over-the-air updates, I still highly, highly, highly recommend you disable software updates on the device internally or externally through OpenDNS or through your router. It's not a good idea to rely on TWRP to block the updates. Just because also it might result in the Fire TV box going into like a rebooting loop where it downloads the over-the-air update, it reboots to install it, TWRP blocks it, and then it goes back into the regular Fire TV OS where starts to download the over-the-air update again, reboots, and so on and so forth. So there's a possibility you'll get into like a rebooting loop, which is not a good thing to be in. So next comment here from Adam, he's kind of backtracking what he said in last week's podcast episode, where he basically was leaving the Fire TV and picked up an NVIDIA Shield and wanted me to start covering the NVIDIA Shield more so, or at all even. But basically, he found out, unfortunately for him, that the NVIDIA Shield does not do surround sound over optical audio like he needs for his own setup. And so he's back to using the Fire TV. And he also says that he's kind of reassured with the Fire TV support because RBox released his 5.0.5.1 ROM. And he says that because I mentioned in last week's episode that I have full confidence that if Amazon ends up blocking Kodi on the Fire TV, that we'll figure out a way around it. And so I just wanted to basically mention that whenever Amazon makes changes to the Fire TV that you don't like, don't go out and buy a different device because you don't like those changes. You know, give it a week, give it 2 weeks. A lot oftentimes we'll figure out ways to either revert those changes if you want to revert them, or figure out better ways of doing things. And so just like I was talking about earlier in this podcast episode, I figured out ways to disable the double home button default action that Amazon put into with this new update. I figured out how to restore the ADB internal client on the device. So especially with root access, there are a lot of things we could do with the device and a lot of things we can revert and change if Amazon makes changes. So no worries there. Learn from Adam's kind of mistake here. Don't go and jump off of the Fire TV or any device really so quickly. Give it a week or so. Let's see what the community comes up with. All right, next question here from Jim. He says, I have a new unopened Fire TV 2 and I'm thinking about rooting it, but don't know how or where to start. So can you please provide me with the correct links to do this? Second question is, the possibility of Amazon banning Kodi in the future propels me to root my other Fire TV 2s that are currently on 5.0.5.1 and 5.0.4. Both have Kodi and Firestarter that I wish to keep after rooting. If it helps, I'm currently not connected to the internet, so is it still possible to root these AFTV2s? Love you to death, Elias. So definitely the first place to start is my starter's guide, which you can find at aftvnews.com/start. I recommend anytime you're rooting any device to always start there. I keep this guide updated more so than any other guide I have, just because I know rooting changes so much. And so, for example, you have your new Fire TV 2 that you haven't even opened. And so as you can see here in the video version, you go into the guide and you select the device that you have, which is Fire TV 2. First thing it asks you is, have you already completed the initial setup? So in that case, you would say no. And then basically what it does is it'll guide you through how to get through the initial setup without taking the over-the-air update. And that'll ensure that you have the most possible chances of rooting the device. And so, you know, going to that guide, here's my guide for getting through the initial startup. There's a video version. I'll put a link to all of this in the show notes. But again, very simple to remember. AFTVnews.com/start is where you want to go for rooting any device. And so after you've gone through the initial setup and gotten to the home screen, then the guide asks you which software version your device is on. And so if you do get through the initial setup without updating, most likely that Fire TV 2 will be on one of the earlier versions. So let's just say it's on 5.0.3. And then you'll see here the guide shows you've got two rooting methods, either the King Root method, which is a recommended one, or the ADA USB cable method. So yeah, definitely this guide is the way to go. And so you mentioned you have a Fire TV 2 on 5.0.5.1. So if you click there, you'll see you only have the A to A USB cable method for rooting that one. And then again, you can start over with that 5.0.4 one. And so you go here, you select the 5.0.4 method, as you could see in the video version of this podcast episode, if you're watching it. Again, that one is available to root with KingRoot. So again, my starter's rooting guide is definitely the way to go with any rooting process for any device. I have it all laid out here. As far as being connected to the internet or not, you can definitely root the Fire TV 2 without being connected to the internet through the USB A to A cable method. And so that is definitely the way to go if you're worried about taking the over-the-air update. But if you can block those over-the-air updates, then the King Root method is probably a little bit easier to follow and you don't need that extra cable. Jim here has another question. He says, regarding my first question, is it easier to install Kodi first and then root, or is it easier to root first and then install Kodi? Also, how can I install the Google Play Store on the Fire TV 2s? As far as Kodi goes, Kodi does not care whether the device is rooted or not. It's no easier to install Kodi if it's a rooted device, so definitely doesn't matter there. I would still recommend rooting first and then installing Kodi, just in case something goes wrong with rooting and you have to kind of start over or factory reset the device. You should definitely root first and then install Kodi. As far as the Google Play Store, just search my site for Google Play Store and then you'll find a guide. I'll include it in the show notes on how to install the Google Play Store on the Fire TV 2. For that specifically, I do recommend rooting first and then installing the Google Play Store, because there's some, when you install a new ROM, it actually overwrites some of the files for the Google Play Store, and so you'll have to end up redoing the Google Play Store installation if you root after the fact. Next question here from JC says, hello, are there any confirmed ways to get NTFS access on a rooted / non-rooted Fire TV 2? There's definitely no way to do it on a non-rooted device, as far as I'm aware. On a rooted device, you can use an app called Stick Mounts. That's one that I know works pretty well, and another one called Paragon, I think it's called. I haven't used that one myself, but I've heard other people talk about it. So definitely check those out. Those are probably your best options for NTFS support. I plan to write a new guide on how to mount an NTFS drive on a rooted device after RBox releases his 5.0 rooted update for the first gen Fire TV. That way I can cover both devices at once. But as soon as that happens, hopefully I'll have a new guide on NTFS support for Fire TVs. Next question here from Frank H. He says, I'm switching to Vue this week, prime time, and getting rid of cable. I will be using Fire Sticks mostly. With me turning in my cable boxes with their remotes, I will only have the small remote for my Fire TV for the missus to use. It will not control the TV. Do you have a recommendation on a universal remote that can control TV functions and Fire Stick functions to make it easier for my non-tech family member to watch TV? Thanks, love the podcast. One of the simplest solutions to this, I think, is a product called SideClick. I've written about it before. I'll put a link in the show notes to it and what I've written about it. I had a chance to review their prototype unit, and they're going to actually release their final units, I think, next month. This was a Kickstarter project. I should be getting the production SideClick units soon, so I'll be reviewing them on the site. But essentially, it's a little strip of universal programmable buttons that actually attaches to your Fire TV stick and Fire TV remote. And so basically you'd be able to have, like, I think 7 or 8 or so buttons that you can program to do different functions on your TV through regular IR. So that's one solution for being able to control your Fire TV stick or Fire TV and your TV and AV units and all that stuff. If you want a full-fledged universal remote, really your only option is Logitech's Harmony line. I'll put a link in the show notes. I have one myself. I like it a lot. But basically the reason that it's your only choice is because that remote actually comes with a separate hub that sits there kind of connected to your network, connected to the device, and it can actually control the Fire TV over Bluetooth. And so the universal remote actually does not control your Fire TV. It actually talks to the hub, and the hub controls the Fire TV. And so it's a very nice, elegant solution. It can control a whole bunch of different devices, but it is on the pricey side. It's about $100, whereas the SideClick that I mentioned, I think, goes for about $30 or so now. It was a little bit cheaper on their Kickstarter campaign, so I'm not sure on the final retail price of the device. But those are really your best two options. The SideClick as an attachment to your Fire TV, your Fire TV stick remote, or the Logitech Harmony remote as a complete universal replacement. Next question here is from Lewis. He says, is the power supply for the AFTV Box 1 and the AFTV Box 4K the same? I want to swap my old AFTV box for the new one, but want to leave the same power supply. This will prevent quite some hassle. To tell you right off the bat, Lewis, no, they are not the same. The first gen box and the second gen box use different connectors. I don't know if the actual brick part is the same, but the actual connector part that plugs into the Fire TV is different. The Fire TV first gen has a fatter, wider plug than the second gen Fire TV. I will say that the second gen Fire TV uses the same plug that the Amazon Echo uses. So if you've got one of those yet, you can look, and that'll let you know exactly what kind of plug it uses. All right, next question here from Lewis. He says, do you know how I can see how long the Echo Dot is back ordered? On the website, it only says you can order with Alexa, but not how long I have to wait for it. No, there's actually no way for somebody who's never ordered an Echo Dot to see how long it's going to take to order an Echo Dot, obviously, unless you actually place the order yourself. I do know of one little trick, which I'll do here on the background. But basically, if you've already ordered an Echo Dot, you can go into your order history and select to reorder it. And that actually lets you order it through the website as opposed to having to order it through the actual Alexa or actual Echo itself. And so I'll go ahead and check for you right now, let you know what the wait period is for Echo Dots right now as I'm recording this. All right, so currently Amazon is saying the Echo Dot will be back in stock on June 23rd. So a little over 2 months from now, it looks like. So that's the in-stock date. So most likely the shipping date's a little bit after that. So figure end of June, early July is when you would get it if you ordered right now. Lastly, Lewis says, it seems your website is getting more and more traffic. Congrats. It seems more and more challenging to cover everything. Would you ever consider more people working on it? The thought has definitely crossed my mind. But it's not where I really envisioned the site going. I never wanted to create a massive new site where I've got other people writing for me and that sort of stuff. I think currently right now, as far as the main important topics that have to go around the Fire TV, I can cover those myself still efficiently and well. You know, there are still definitely things on my list of things to do that I haven't gotten around to. And people have been asking me to cover other devices like the Android TV devices. And so, yeah, there's definitely more I could want to do. And having other people help me would probably let me do those things. But I'm not like looking for an employee or anything like that right now. But definitely something that has been on my mind, something that I will consider. Next question here from Wonko the Sane. He says, firstly, this is a fantastic site. You deserve much kudos for all the work you put into sharing this information with the AFTV community. Thanks. Secondly, I have two Fire TV originals, one updated to OS 5.0.5, and it has made the picture quality worse. There are so many dropped frames now that the motion is jerky and unpleasant to watch. Do you know of any possible fix for this? I haven't heard of any frame dropping issues from other people. This is the first time hearing about it with the new OS compared to the old one. I haven't had any issues myself. I ran a first generation Fire TV on Fire OS 5 for a while, you know, over a month as my main box that I used every day, and didn't really notice any degrading. Only thing I can recommend is to do a factory reset. Maybe there's some issue there. Sorry, I can't be any more helpful. Wonko continues to say, the other AFTV is one I purchased that is on OS 51.1.4.3. And when I compare them, the performance is pretty much perfect on the older OS. I have blocked updates with OpenVPN for the time being, but I am sure it's just a question of time until one installs. Is there a way of rooting this AFTV to prevent updates? I'm not interested in sideloading. I just want to get my picture quality back. I guess the one that is already updated can't be downgraded, so it's not much use to me now. Keep up the great work. So unfortunately, there is no way to root Fire TV running that software version 1.4.3. Now your Fire TV running 5.0.5 can be rooted with Kingroot, but I have not tried downgrading a Fire TV first gen running FireOS 5 down back to running FireOS 3. I imagine it's possible and it should work fine, but I don't know for sure. So that if you try it, there's a chance you'll brick your device. That's for sure. I have a downgrading guide for the first gen Fire TV, but it was for FireOS 3 and how to move around in FireOS 3. I don't know if it applies to FireOS 5. I haven't tried it myself. I'll link it in the show notes. If you want to take the risk and try to downgrade it using that guide, you can. Yeah, sorry I didn't have better news for you, but yeah, you're not going to be able to root that older device to block updates. Because really rooting is the only way to block updates on FireOS 3 outside of using a router or a service like OpenVPN. And as far as the 5.0.5 box, it's hit or miss whether you're going to be able to downgrade that one. Sorry, I couldn't be more helpful, man. Next question here from Jimmy says, what's the best way to contact you privately? I emailed you using the link at the bottom of the site, but didn't get a response. So my email link at the bottom of my site that takes you to contact@aftvnews.com is really the best way to contact me if you don't want to post a comment or you know, ask your what you want to say in the comments here. I mean, part of the reason I started this podcast and part of the reason I do the big Q&A section at the end is kind of to get in touch with people and to help people out, because it got to the point where I was getting more emails than I have time to read. So usually when I get emails in, I'll always read the subject line and see what it is. But if it's like a tech support issue that you want help with, it's rare that I'll actually reply to those emails, just because when I reply to some technical help that somebody's asking for with an email, I'm only helping that one person. Whereas if I do it here in the podcast, I'm helping a whole bunch of people. So if you have like a tech support issue, definitely try to ask it in the podcast or try to ask it in the comments of one of my posts that's relevant to that issue, because I do try to read all of my comments that come in on my posts. But with emails, if the subject line doesn't kind of catch my attention, there's a chance I will skip over it and I won't have time to read it. I don't delete the emails, I just archive them, and every once in a while I'll go back in and start going through and reading those emails that I've kind of archived away that I didn't get a chance to get to. But if you want to contact me privately about something other than tech support, just make sure that subject line is relevant and actually has to do with what you want to talk about. So that I'll actually, you know, take the time to read the email, because if it's just kind of vague, there'll be other emails that I'll probably want to get to instead of yours. All right, next question here from GDroid666. He's asking, why don't I include a link to the live stream when I put up my Q&A topic post? Usually because it's the next day on Fridays when I put up my post with the actual link to the live stream, because I have to set up the live stream ahead of time. And so I usually don't do that until Friday morning, and that's when I put up my post. But I guess I could probably set it up on Thursdays and include the link into my Q&A request post. Maybe in future ones, I'll actually include it there also and not just wait till the next day. But if you go to youtube.com/AFTV News, you'll always find the link there to the live stream. Also, if you're subscribed to my YouTube channel and you have the YouTube app installed on your smartphone, you'll get a notice when I go live. So that's a good way to make sure to catch the live stream. A lot of people do it that way. But yeah, I'll try to set up the live stream on Thursdays from now on and just include the link in the Q&A post as well as my Friday morning announcement posts. Next question here from Wicked Fort. He says, I have an Amazon Fire TV that is on version 5.0.4. I've been trying to use two USB Microsoft 360 controllers on my Amazon Fire TV, and only one controller will work at a time. I have used several USB hubs that have power through an AC outlet. I have a total of three USB 360 controllers that are totally fine when working through a desktop or a laptop. I was curious if I can't use the same type of controller, or this is something version 5.0.4 has issues with. I have contemplated about buying a cheap Bluetooth controller to tide my needs over, or maybe the official Amazon Fire TV controller if it goes on sale to a decent rate. I've not personally used the 360 controller, but it's odd that it's not working with multiple controllers over USB. I mean, that might be a common issue there. Maybe somebody can chime in the comments to kind of confirm whether that is an issue with the Microsoft 360 controller. But I do know that the Fire TV does work with multiple USB controllers. I've definitely done that myself, just not with the Microsoft Xbox 360 controller. As far as getting a Fire TV game controller, either Bluetooth or the official one, yeah, that should definitely fix your issue. You should be able to, at the very least, to connect the Bluetooth controller and one of the USB 360 controllers at the same time. So that would work. But as far as getting the game controller, the official one from Amazon, on sale, pretty much it never goes on sale. The first version of Amazon's official controller pretty much never went on sale from Amazon, and this new second one has yet to go on sale, and I don't expect it to ever really go on sale. The only exception is occasionally Amazon will sell it at a $10 discount if you buy it with a Fire TV 2. Now, I'm not talking about the gaming bundle. I'm talking about just buying the regular Fire TV 2 and then adding an extra controller onto that purchase. So you don't have to actually buy the gaming bundle to get that $10 discount. All right, that'll conclude the 35th episode of the AFTV Newscast. Thank you so much for watching or listening. As always, I put the episode up on Saturdays through the RSS feed, through iTunes, through TuneIn, through Stitcher, through a whole bunch of different places. You can find it there. So links to all of that down below. Of course, the video version is always available on youtube.com/AFTV News. If you are watching this on YouTube right now after the fact, please hit that like button. Really helps get the YouTube episode noticed. And thanks so much for watching, and hope to see you next week.